It's The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds. Today, the National Transportation Safety Board announced the findings of an investigation into that collapse of the Skagit River Bridge. The agency determined there were multiple failures. As you'll recall, a section of the I-5 bridge collapsed last May after a large truck hauling an oversized load struck the top of the structure. Two cars ended up in the Skagit River. Two other vehicles were damaged. Thankfully, no one was seriously injured. Here to talk about the NTSB's recommendations, KUOW reporter Patricia Murphy. Patricia, what happened? What did the NTSB say?
Well, everybody shares a little blame in this, Ross. According to the NTSB, the state, the Alberta company who was responsible for permitting the truck, the driver of the truck, the pilot car. One of the things that investigators noted were that there were gaps in Washington State's permitting process. Mullen Trucking, the Alberta company that was responsible for the load, failed to survey that route appropriately, according to the NTSB. And the state, they would like to make that more of a requirement. They would like the state to make that more explicit that they should be doing that along the way. They said Mullen didn't consider that reduced clearance. The driver of the truck apparently was following too closely to that pilot car. So even if the pilot car had realized that something was amiss there, it would have been too late to stop. Investigators also determined that the driver of the pilot car was on the phone and may have been distracted during that bridge collapse.
So the National Transportation Safety Board found a number of problems that led to this disaster, near disaster, that caused the collapse of the bridge. Did the Transportation Safety Board give some concrete recommendations out for changes to avoid this in the future?
Yeah, they made 18 recommendations. You know, the oversized load required a special permit from the state. They do want that expressly said that that you need to survey this route. That is a very, very important part. If they had checked the bridge's height, they would have known and could have avoided this bridge strike. They recommended that something as simple as a sign be put at the front of the bridge, alerting to the height issue with that bridge. It was a rounded bridge, so the lanes on either side were lower than the center of that bridge. That could have helped significantly. Bridge strike data, they want that transmitted to the state. Drivers should be telling the state when they hit bridges. The NTSB says that by not requiring drivers to inform the state, they're missing an opportunity to
respond. You mean trucks are hitting bridges, but the state doesn't find out?
Yep. If they self-report, they self-report. But there is no requirement to collect that data right now.
So here, there's all these recommendations from the federal government. What's the state's reaction been? Do they plan to adopt these? Have they reacted yet to what the feds are recommending?
Yeah, the State Department of Transportation just issued a statement saying that they appreciate the NTSB and its recommendations. They are working to enact all of these recommendations, and they will continue to work closely with the state legislature, the freight industry, on the recommendations. However, these things are not simple. The infrastructure, as explained to me by Lars Erickson at the State Department of Transportation, the transportation system and the infrastructure is aging at this point. These are national issues. They're not just here in Washington State.
Patricia Murphy, thank you so much.
Okay, thanks.
You're listening to The Record on KUOW. And as Patricia just mentioned, the Skagit Bridge is just one piece of transportation in our state. And it's clear that maintaining infrastructure is a big challenge. So how does the rest of our transportation system stack up? Mark Hallenbeck directs the Washington State Transportation Center at the University of Washington. He plays close attention to these issues. Thanks for joining us, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
So how does our transportation infrastructure stack up?
Well, it's reasonably typical for the rest of the country, which means it's aging in place. Parts of it aren't so bad. Parts of it are pretty bad. And it's slowly getting worse.
Now, who's responsible to get the money to fix these things and make sure that they don't continue to age until they just fall into the water?
Well, everybody. Realize that the transportation system is run by a wide variety of different people. The state owns part of it. The county owns part of it. The cities own part of it. And, of course, the public actually is the people who elect and decide whether we're going to pay taxes or not. So the state is after their own or looks after one particular set of interests. The counties and the cities look after their interests. And all of them turned to the federal government for help. And the public is the people in the end who decide if you're willing to pay money or not.
Now, at the end of the day, which entity is paying for most of the roads that we drive on? I would assume the federal government is in charge of the interstate highways.
Well, they're not in charge of. They fund.
That's right.
So there's a federal gas tax, and the federal gas tax is passed back to the states. The states then match it with state gas tax and other state funds. State funds are also passed back to cities and counties, and there are specific jurisdictional guidelines, so everybody knows what they're responsible for and has a pot of money they work from.
And here we get into this conversation of the Highway Trust Fund, which Congress is voting on today. That provides a lot of our state transportation funding here, does it not, from the federal government?
Yeah, it's something like a third of the budget. Again, I'm not quite up on exactly what the statistics are, but it's something like a third of the entire highway funding in the state comes from the feds.
Do we need to be concerned about that vote today and how that might affect us and our repairs?
Sure. It's very definitely. It will affect what you do. So the federal government supplies money and they give you pots of money. So much money has to be spent on interstate and so much money needs to be spent on bridges and so much money gets to be spent on buses and so much money ought to be spent on bike trails. And the state then matches, and if they don't want to spend that much money on bike trails, they actually can give some money back. It's usually not a problem that spending what the feds want you to spend money on. But you also have to match that with state resources to essentially show that you have skin in the game.
Mark Kallenbeck is with me. He directs the Washington State Transportation Center at the University of Washington. Now, I've seen a State Transportation Commission report that I can't even remember the number. It was huge. It was tens of billions of dollars in delayed maintenance on a lot of our highways and our bridges. It just seems to be building up and building up. And my understanding is part of the problem here is that we rely so much on the gas tax. And people are driving less, and cars are getting more fuel efficient, and electric cars don't even use gas at all. Do we have kind of a core issue in how we're paying for our roads and that the gas tax can't do it anymore?
Yeah, we have two very core issues. The first one is that the amount of money we generate with the gas tax is declining. As people stop driving 67 Impalas and drive electric hybrid Priuses, the amount of tax revenue you generate per mile driven is going down and down fairly dramatically. The other problem you have is as infrastructure ages, you require more money simply to maintain it. That's true of your house. It's true of your car. And what we've essentially stopped doing is we're no longer patching the leaky window in the side of the house. And so that's fine. You can live with that for a couple of years. But if you don't deal with it fairly soon, pretty soon the whole side of the house rots. And instead of having to pay $500-$600 for a window, now you're talking about re-siding your house and swapping out some of the main structural support members, and it's a $25,000 job. And that's some of the stuff we're really starting to worry about in infrastructure, where instead of doing a bridge deck replacement, you have to replace the entire bridge because interior steel corroded.
What's the best idea in the future for how we should be funding roads if this gas tax is going to be just declining returns going forward? Where should the funding come from? What's the mechanism by which we can afford to pay for these roads?
Well, I don't have a good answer for that question. That's a great question, but I don't have an answer. Matter of fact, the Puget Sound Regional Council is just about to start a project to figure out how the region should be spending money. Should it be increased gas taxes? Should it be a carbon tax? Should it be a vehicle miles travel tax, so you pay per mile regardless of what kind of engine you have in your car? Should it be licensing fees? Should it be tolls? There are a whole variety of different ways to charge tolls. All of those things are under discussion, and the biggest problem is people just don't want to pay at the moment. We're not sure that we fear that what we're paying isn't going to the stuff we like. And so there's an awful lot of conflict about who pays what and where the money gets spent. And that is a very ugly process, both at the federal level and at the state level and even regionally, locally.
Well, we're past the era of the freeway. I mean, now we pay on a toll to cross on 520, the Tacoma Narrows Bridge, and there are tolls to get into the fast access lanes in some highways around our area. There are those who suggest, as one of those points you made, that we pay for every time we drive on the road. Do you think that's a practical solution to be able to monitor all of our driving so as soon as we drive onto a public street, we're beginning to pay for that street?
So technically, it's absolutely practical. It's not a technical issue. The Germans right now, if you want to drive a heavy truck in Germany, you get tracked. That's just the way it is. So technically, absolutely, you can do that. But there are very significant political problems associated with that. There are also some fairness, equity problems. I like fairness better than equity, but fairness is a huge issue, in large part because when we take roads that are currently free and add a toll to them, regardless of how you do that technically, many people made housing job location decisions based on the assumption that they could drive from Mill Creek to Seattle for free or from Puyallup to Renton for free, meaning they're not paying an additional toll. And when you turn around 3 years after they bought that house and say, oh, yeah, it's another $2, that's really hard for them because that's not in their budget. And so the retrofitting of some kind of additional tolling mechanism is difficult on particular groups of people. On the other hand, it's a great fairness issue in that I use the road, I pay for the road. So you're trading off the fairness of use versus fee and decisions that people made 5 years ago that are now suddenly not good decisions because the politics changed.
Mark, always a pleasure. I always learn something when you stop by. I appreciate it.
No problem. Happy to be here.
Mark Hallenbeck, director of the University of Washington's Washington State Transportation Center. This is The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds.